You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
So certainly in the first two centuries, we see women, at least some parts of the early communities, holding co-equal roles with men. After Constantine made Christianity legal, worship moved from the house church into the basileia, the basilicas, and it became a public space where women's leadership was not as accepted because of the cultural norms of the time. And so around that time, you see more and more suppression of women in leadership roles.
That's Sister Chris Schenck. She's executive director of the Catholic group called Future Church, being interviewed by National Public Radio. She and her group and several others hope that with the election of a new pope, Pope Francis, the role of women in the church is going to change. Now, she made an historical claim there about pre-Constantinian Christianity, insinuating that there was a time when women were afforded full roles. She says offices or leadership. She's talking there, of course, about the priesthood and the role of the bishop. She says there was a time when that was true in the church, and then along comes the Constantinian era, and the culture ensued, and the culture ruled out women priests. Is that true? Well, we'll find out whether it's true, and in the course of that conversation, talk about where one would expect Pope Francis to go or remain with regard to the role of women in the church during his pontificate. Joining us to talk about that, Dr. James Hitchcock, professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Always glad to be here.
You were actually there with EWTN, the television network. You were reporting and commenting on these things as they were taking place. We actually were watching you here in the studio when the selection of the new pope was coming down, afternoon time over here. As a historian, what was it like to actually cover history in real time?
Well, it was really quite exciting. We were on the roof of a five-story building looking directly over St. Peter's Square. Ironically, at the very moment when the name of the new pope was announced, we could not hear it. And Colleen Campbell, who was ahead of our group, quickly got on the microphone and said, who was it? And somebody then gave her the name. It was quite a surprise because I knew who he was. He had been mentioned as someone who had been a serious candidate in 2005. His name was occasionally mentioned before this election, but in each case the person would say, oh, but he's too old. So this really did come as a very, very interesting surprise.
The press is trying their hardest to cast him as a real shift in gears, and they're focusing on some legitimate things, like the fact that he is eschewing some of the papal prerogatives, that he is tends to be a man who wants to be kind of down at the street level as much as he possibly can, even given his elevated post in the Roman Catholic Church. And I think they're getting that right. But what about these early expressed hopes, and we heard it from Sister Schenck there in our opening audio, that somehow he's going to mean a real change, especially for the role of women in the church?
I don't think that's going to happen. Depending on what you mean by the role of women, they will not be ordained to the priesthood. Now, there are various ways in which women can hold responsible positions in the church, and some of them do. But the sacramental question here, whether women can function as priests and bishops, it's been made clear by the last couple of popes that that's a matter that cannot change, and he won't change it. Unfortunately, I think the secular media are relatively uninformed about these issues, and they really can't make these kinds of distinctions. And the fact that the pope espouses a simple lifestyle, eschews much of the ceremony and pomp of the office, somehow in their mind translates it into, oh, he doesn't really believe all these old doctrines, which, of course, is a huge leap and quite an erroneous one.
What about the claim that we heard there before we brought you on, from Sister Schenck, who said that there was a time in pre-Constantinian, that would be the first several centuries of Christianity, when she insinuated women did fill the role of priests in house churches, but after the venue of worship changed to the basilica, and after Constantine, well, the culture ensued, and that fell out of favor.
That's a position the feminists have been taking for quite a while. It's almost entirely speculative, and there is practically no evidence. First of all, the whole point about house churches, that people, that the Christians only met in each other's houses, very simple community meals presided over by presumably the lady of the house, that's a great oversimplification. We know that there were church buildings much earlier than the time of Constantine. Also a very interesting point, if you're going to talk about cultural prejudice as they do, it would have been derived from the Jews, because the Romans had priestesses and vestal virgins and people like that. It was the Jews who did not have women in priestly office. And that was something I think that was present in Christianity from the earliest times. But we know practically nothing about these early so-called house churches. We have some little information about the way the Eucharist was celebrated. They make much of the fact that occasionally you see a tombstone that will have on it some name like presbytera, which was the Greek word that the Catholic Church translates as priest, and that's the feminine form. But it's also been pointed out that it could have been used for the wife of a priest, because priests were married at that time. The word episcopa, which was what the church translates as a bishop, meaning overseer, that was used for other kinds of offices besides that of the bishop. So this is at best a very dubious kind of evidence that they make use of.
With regard to Pope Francis then, well, actually, before we move on to him, I do have a question. It seems as though, and perhaps you can explain it to me, that much of the foment for the ordination of women priests, especially in the West, within the Catholic Church, comes from within female holy orders, or at least from women who call themselves sisters.
Right.
How does this come about?
Well, unfortunately, that's a very complicated question, because there's a major crisis of women's religious life right after the Second Vatican Council. The way I would put it simply is they abandoned many of their traditional beliefs and practices, and they created a vacuum that had to be filled somehow. And so many of them left, of course, but of those who remain, many now think, well, okay, the way I'll find a new meaning for the sisterhood is to become a priest. There are laywomen involved in the same effort. But what I find a major practical objection to this is, when you read carefully what the feminist women say, they don't believe in the priesthood in the sense in which the Catholic Church believes in the priesthood. They see this as an office of power, and they feel like they've been shut out from power of the church. And that's the wrong way to go about it. You know, I think if we discovered that a young man who was applying for the priesthood was interested in it because of the power, it would be good to reject such a person. And many feminists are quite candid about it.
Is it more informed by a feminist worldview, for lack of a better word, than it is by any kind of Catholic history or Catholic theology?
Yes, very much so. If you go back before Vatican II, 50 years ago, you won't find anybody talking about women priests. It's like very, very similar, let's say, to homosexuality. You wouldn't find any Catholic back 50 years ago saying we ought to accept homosexuals. These issues arise in the secular culture, and then they're imported into the church. They do not have Catholic roots, and people who try to find Catholic roots have to scramble around and grasp at any little straw they can find.
Well, that is a pretty amazing irony, isn't it, that the feminists claim that it was the secular culture that edged women out of the priesthood in the early fourth century, and you're saying, no, it's actually the secular culture that is fomenting for women in the priesthood in the 21st century.
Yes, exactly. I think, well, of course, it in a way, you know, again, it comes down to a kind of a bid for power, I think. And you kind of use what, if you think you're a group just being discriminated against and you're being shut out from power, you tend to employ any argument that comes to mind. And one of the contradictions in feminism is that often they will insist there's no difference between men and women. And this, so therefore there should be no discrimination. Then at the same time they may turn around and talk about the sort of feminine mystique, which is a special type of spiritual awareness or a special type of compassion and love which women possess and men do not. So, you know, they'll try to play it both ways.
With only about 30 seconds here, perhaps in just a sentence or a paragraph, what are your expectations with regard to the proper role of women in the church under Pope Francis?
Well, I would not expect to see it change drastically. That is to say, for a certainty, women will not be ordained to the priesthood. They will not become bishops. They could be given more responsible administrative positions in the church, which in some cases they have. There are women who are serving as chancellors of various dioceses, which is kind of an administrative position. There are some women who work in the papal curia in Rome in administrative positions of one kind or another. Ironically, discontented nuns have abandoned some of the most responsible positions that women had, and that is college presidents and heads of hospitals. They rapidly gave up that activity after the Second Vatican Council, although the women in those positions had very important positions of responsibility.
Dr. James Hitchcock is professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you. Always like to be here.
When we come back, we're going to spend about 10 minutes with Dr. James Lamb. When and how, especially in the public square, as a Christian, do you speak about abortion? Now, it's kind of a two-edged sword. There's a time to speak and a time to remain silent. But when there is the atrocity of abortion, is my language too strong? When there is the slaughter of abortion, again, is the language too strong? Is there ever a time to remain silent? We'll talk about the strength of language and the time to speak about abortion with Dr. James Lamb of Lutherans for Life right after this.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Stephen Hine on the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education wishes to invite all Issues, Etc. listeners to its 13th annual conference hosted by Concordia Theological Seminary this July 16th through the 18th. For the first time, we will be featuring three-day intensive in-service opportunities in such areas as teaching Latin, classroom design and management, Christian and non-Christian worldviews, classical Lutheran pedagogy. Please join us for our best conference yet.
You can find out more about the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ccle.org. ccle.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Here's a special offer for Issues, Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a recording of an Ascension and Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues, Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Issues, Etc. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Pentecost Sunday, May 19th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Ascension and Pentecost sermons. Now, when you make your gift, please indicate whether you want a downloadable version or a CD of these sermons. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us during the Easter season.